ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Kirk Herbstreit and Matt Barry.
Welcome into the ESPN College Football Podcast. It is Monday, August 30th. It's going to be a Monday tradition unlike any other. Matt Barry, always joined by Kirk Herbstreit in the Monday edition of the podcast. And Kirk, we're going to move on to week one in just a minute, but I am very curious about your thoughts on what we saw there in week zero, Nebraska, Illinois, and then what UCLA did to Hawaii.
I think there's a few things that stood out. Number one, Brett Bielema coming back to the Big Ten and getting a win. You know, I know a lot of people took away more about, man, Nebraska, what's going on? You know, with Scott Frost and the Huskers. I took it as much about, man, it's just great. I'm a Brett Bielema guy. You know, he and I played in college at the same time. He was at Iowa. He's a Big Ten guy through and through. And went down to Arkansas, didn't work out, was in the NFL as an assistant, and now back as a head coach. So I was anxious to see his team play. And the team played very similar to the way that his teams played at Wisconsin. So I'm excited for that that win for him. Nebraska, we'll talk about. That was concerning. Fresno State is dangerous. I think, you know, San Jose State, dangerous. They got both these teams can score points. Both these teams are playing Pac-12 opponents this week. We'll talk more about that in a second. And I think the other thing that stood out is UCLA, you know, the way they got started. I know it's Hawaii, yeah. But, you know, Chip year four, I thought coming into the year had a chance to have a decent team, and we'll see, long way to go. I wish their fans would show up and support their team. That's an embarrassment, but, overall, I think Chip's got the best team that he's had, and we'll find out how good they are this week when they play LSU at home.
Yeah, I want to bullet point a couple of those things because we will move on to Nebraska as it relates to San Jose State, Fresno State. I want to talk about them for a second because this Thursday I'm calling UCF Boise State, 7 p.m. Eastern.
ESPN. Good for you. That'll be a great game.
That's a fun game, and I can't wait to watch that game because with the UCFs, the Boise States, the Fresno States, the San Jose States, I hate using that term group of five because it's college football. Cincinnati, yeah. Another one.
Yeah.
Kirk, what we're seeing a lot now with some of these programs is that they're getting a lot of infusion from the transfer portal. And so you're seeing a lot of these schools now show up on Saturdays that can really play with anyone. And San Jose State, no one talks about them. That's a damn good football team and a program that's kind of on the up.
For sure. And they got a quarterback in Nate Starkle who can spin it. And he's got a lot of people to throw to. They love to get the ball thrown downfield vertically. And, you know, if you're a Pac-12 team and you're looking around at Fresno State and San Jose State, you better strap it on and be ready to play. I think USC and Oregon this week, big test for them as people maybe look down the road. Like Oregon has Ohio State coming up and Oregon fans are excited about Ohio State, but they better be ready for the Bulldogs first.
And Starkle, you'd mentioned, he's one of those guys, tailor-made, transfer portal guy at a Texas A&M. He was one that maybe ID'd as the next great Aggie quarterback, and now he's moved on. But yeah. I just love the fact that in week zero, some of these teams and these schools got the spotlight all to themselves, and it probably wasn't a good thing that Scott Frost got the spotlight all to himself. You'd mentioned Chip Kelly in year four, same for Scott Frost entering year four. You look at the juxtaposition between those two programs, year four of Chip Kelly, year four of Scott Frost. I think that's the last thing Frost could have afforded in week zero against Illinois.
And Matt, the thing is that they didn't just lose. You know, it's tough to win on the road, especially to start the season in conference play. That's tough. I don't care if it's Illinois or not. But the way they lost, you know, the punt, catching a punt inside the one-yard line and getting a safety, missing a few extra points, costly penalties at critical times. The turnovers, critical turnovers for Adrian Martinez, you know, that they were right in the middle of that game. And then he fumbles and Illinois takes it into the end zone and really never looked back. So it was the miscues. And if you're a Nebraska fan, it's like, and he even said it, I've seen this movie before. It's like same old, same old. It's not only losing, it's how you're losing when you feel like you have as good, if not better talent. And you're stubbing your toe. That's the thing I think that's aggravating. And again, this is a program that's had losing seasons five of the last six seasons. This is Nebraska. Like Nebraska's tradition and history, you put in there with the elite programs of the country and what their fans have had to endure. And then to start off the season in 2021, where it's going to be different. He's our guy. Any moment now, we're going to turn and go to the right direction. And you lose to open up the season. In the fashion in which they did. So, I read a column on Sunday. I'm sure you did too. I thought it was incredibly well written. And it was more of, we keep making excuses. We keep blaming this coach or that coach, but like, is this our new reality? And I keep hoping it's not. I keep thinking it's not. And people say players today in 2021, they don't want to go to Lincoln, Nebraska, but do they want to go to Des Moines? Because Iowa wins 8 every year. Like Iowa, you know, they'll win 8, 10, 11, back down to 8. I mean,
that's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, don't give me Lincoln, Nebraska. There are other coaches that are winning. There are other programs that don't have the pedigree, don't have the facilities, don't have the history that Nebraska has. I'm literally dumbfounded because I keep thinking, like their own fans, when Scott Frost got hired out of UCF, I was like, oh, here we go. And nothing yet. And so I have no answers for you. Their facilities are second to none. Their tradition, second to none. And if Iowa can do it, I know Nebraska can.
Let me throw this at you, because I'm with you. I remember we talked on this in the Week Zero pod. Like, these guys, you wanted nothing to do with Nebraska.
Late
80s and early 90s. What offense did they run when Scott Frost was winning national championships at Nebraska? Not the one he's running now.
No.
And maybe he just needs to go back to what he knows best, which is that offense, that maybe then you start looking at different kind of athletes. Because Kirk, this Adrian Martinez kid, I know he came out of high school, is a top. He hadn't done anything yet. And I don't know.
His freshman year was outstanding. I mean, you're talking about a way to start in 2018. That was amazing. And it's been all downhill since. But I don't know. I know the game has changed from the era of the I formation, the I back. You know, Amon Green, Mike Rozier, it was just one after another for about 15, 20 years. And they always had a quarterback who was sensational, you know, ability to run that option and then go play action. And, you know, again, the game has changed immensely, but I just cannot put my finger on how and why Nebraska football is where they are and where they have been for a number of years. I just can't.
So I think a segue from Nebraska, and one of the programs I think that you and I would put in the top five of the list that the sport needs to be really, really good, I would take that same argument with Florida State, who has Notre Dame on Sunday night, that when Bobby Bowden and even Jimbo had Florida State going, Florida State loves to be the villain, and they need to find their way back into the conversation. Because Kirk, that's another all those Florida programs, Florida State, Miami, when they're good, college football is great. And I think Norvell is close.
I do too. I kind of pick Florida State as a surprise, sneaky team, not to say that they're going to unseat Clemson or North Carolina, but I just think from where they've been, I mean, you're talking about, I don't know how many players he chased off from the time he walked in there as a head coach to where they're trying to be this year, but it's been a bunch of guys. And we see that all the time. A new coach comes in, he's going to set, hey, here's the new standard. You don't want to live up to it. I'll give you one more warning. You're not going to live up to it. See you later. Whether that's going to class, whether that's being a good teammate, no matter what the rules are, you got to fall in line with the culture, and guys aren't going to do that. So he's had to chase away a number of guys. Well, I think on the back end of that, because to get to where you're going to go, you got to hit the bottom, and then you start to climb your way back up. And I really feel that right now, Jordan Travis is quarterback who showed enough to make you go, this guy's got a chance. And Mackenzie Milton, from what I've been told from Mike and others in Tallahassee, this is not just a cute story. I mean, when Mackenzie Milton went down at UCF a few years ago, I was like, he was a star in the school.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I hope he's going to be able to walk again. It was one of those injuries. Forget football. I mean, unfortunately, his career is going to have to be over. But man, I hope he's okay. And now here we are, like 3 years later, he's in Tallahassee. He's in these scrimmages. And I'm like, is it just a story to be a story? And they're like, no. He's competing with Jordan. I get to say it's an either or situation. I'm like, holy, if Mackenzie Milton comes back and plays well, because he's such a great kid. Like, you can talk about changing culture. Both these guys are great guys, but because of his injury, that'll be the story of the year in college football. if he comes back from that devastating knee injury. So I can't wait to see if it's Jordan Travis, if it's Mackenzie Milton, is it a combination of the two? So yeah, man, I'm like you. We grew, the era that we grew up in. Are you kidding me? Florida State with they're very similar to what we feel like when we think of Miami, when we think of Nebraska. That's Florida State. We need them as college football fans. We need Florida State to be back, and hopefully Mike Norvell gets them heading that way this year.
And what, like, you hit a point, because you do, you've got to hit rock bottom. It's like life. If you're trying to get better as a person and you've made some mistakes in your life, you've got to know what the bottom feels like to build your way back up to the top. And the same thing hits for college football. But when you're a program like Florida State, I know Miami went through some stuff with Mark Richt and they're trying to get it back with Manny Diaz. What causes a program that's historically dumb? What causes that for them to just hit the floor?
So I've been around the Florida State program very, very closely because they were winning a lot of football games. So we would either be calling their games or game day would be around their games. And when you do that, you go into these production meetings, as you know, with the head coach and with the coordinators and with the players. And when Jameis Winston was there in 13, when they won it all, in 14, they got to the playoff, the first year of the playoff, they lost to Oregon out at the Rose Bowl. You would go into those meetings and there was just a feeling of we're getting back to being Florida State. We don't care about who gets the individual attention. We don't care about the accolades. We're here to win. And it was a collective feeling. I know outside people were making fun of Jameis and whatever else, but inside there was a belief that we can win. And with Jameis as our quarterback and with the players we have around us, we're going to win a lot of games. And it just kept growing. On the back end of that became a lot of individual stars came off of those teams that won championships. And on the back end of that, it became more about the individual. And so to me, they lost their way towards the end of Jimbo. Remember what Lamar Jackson did with the Florida State team?
Oh,
I almost feel like that game, you could just put an asterisk next to and be like, that was the demise of Florida State. Mm-hmm. They've never recovered from that game. And I think it was a bunch of very talented individuals, Derwin James type of guys.
Yeah.
And I didn't see the same buy-in as a group. It was became more about we're losing games, but I'm going to the league. And Mike Norvell inherited that, the individuality. And what kids sometimes 18 to 22 years old don't get is in this world of build your own brand, social media, NIL, you got to get paid. Guys like you and I and people nationally that cover this sport, do you think we go and follow teams that are 0-3 or 1-4 and want to write a story or talk about a story about a great player who's on an 0-3 team or 1-3? No, it doesn't happen. So if a team's 4-0, guys like you and I are like, what the heck's going on over at UCLA?
Yeah.
You know, if UCLA is 0-4, you think we care about Zach Charbonnet transferring from Michigan? Hell no.
No, they're not even on TV.
Right. All of a sudden, UCLA, if they're 4-0 and they beat LSU and they get it going, oh, my God, everybody gets their binoculars out. Like, what the heck's going on with Dorian Thompson-Robinson? Oh, my God, look what he's – and so my point is these 18- to 22-year-olds sometimes get it reversed. They think it's about the individual, focusing on the individual, and that's going to help them. It's the opposite. If you want to get individual attention, if your team is good and you're a good teammate and you go out and win games – that's when you, on the back end, get the individual attention and the individual accolades. And Florida State, to me, it was like poison within that program. And Mike Norvell has been trying piece by piece to try to prop them back up and get them to buy into team. And I think he's making strides. We'll see how on Sunday, how far he's come.
It is such a good point because if you're good, Kirk, if you're a good college football player, the NFL is going to find you.
Sure.
One step further, if your team is good, how many times have we heard these stories about recruiters that are going into a high school to look at a star tailback, and while they're there, they're watching a defensive lineman or a receiver play their ass off, and all of a sudden they're like, well, wait a second, this guy popped at practice. Now I'm interested in him. Why? Yep. Because the team was performing and he got an opportunity to show out. Mac Jones is an example. What were we talking about post Tua? Who's this Mac Jones kid? Tua's out.
No, before that, people were talking about, well, thank God Bryce Young. Here.
Yeah.
Thank God Bryce Young, the five-star out of California, because we don't want to go to Mac Jones. Like Alabama fans were saying that.
Right. And now look, Mac Jones might start for the New England Patriots. If you are on a team that's competitive and you're good, NFL scouts are going to find you. That's their job to unearth talent that might not pop off the screen. And so with Florida State, they have NFL talent. Miami has NFL talent. As much as we're looking at these ranked games, five, I think, is the most in week one since 1950. I'm looking at coming out parties for Miami, for Florida State, some of these programs that have tried to find their way back up to pop on ABC over the weekend and say, hey, guys, remember us? Remember the U? Remember Florida State? I get it. Alabama's good. Notre Dame's good, but we're us.
Yeah. I mean, and what I think we learned just even with the handful of games that we had this past weekend is look how quick things can change. I mean, look how all of a sudden UCLA played Hawaii, and Hawaii's not going to have probably a great year, but all of a sudden we're like, ooh, after one game. So you're right. It is a coming out party. It is an opportunity. And I think the other thing to keep in perspective is these players are coming out of a COVID year. It was so unusual. You got to put, again, teams didn't practice in the spring. And when they got together finally in the summer, many of them didn't know, are we playing this year or are we not? And they're throwing the ball, thinking maybe they'll play, but not the same kind of focus that you would have on a normal year. And then when they got to camp, they didn't even tackle. So it was just such a strange year. And now they get fans in the stadium. They've had an entire year of winter conditioning, spring football, and camp. And now you come out, and now you get an opportunity to kind of show what you can do as a team. And teams like LSU, Wisconsin, Penn State, who play each other, by the way, all these teams are looking to kind of say, thank goodness 2020 is behind us.
Yep.
Here we go in 2021 with a new opportunity.
I'll take that one step further. You're talking about two of the programs we were just discussing. Mike Norvell, first year at Florida State. You think that's how he wants to bring in his era during a 100-year pandemic? You can't be with your players. You can't touch your players. You can't do anything.
Yeah.
Matt Lashley, offensive coordinator at Miami. You get De'Aaron King at quarterback. You want your first offseason with him done via Zoom? You know, so now we're really starting to see these guys. I'm looking at it as 1A asterisk that Norvell finally gets a full season. Offensive coordinators with their quarterbacks finally get a full season. And when I look at Miami, I called their spring game. And so I know what's coming back. And I know you call it Alabama spring game and you know that program. I know we're not supposed to say things like this, but I hope that Alabama doesn't blow their doors off because then it's just the same as it ever was. I want that game to be so close. It's uncomfortable for people in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah. Well, that would be great. And anybody who's been around De'Aaron King falls in love with him as a person, not just the player. And I think, you know, being around Miami a lot last year, I really feel like they've been missing at that spot. They just haven't had an alpha, you know, at that spot that was legit. And the players believe in De'Aaron King, like all great teams. You know, he's got a handful of receivers that are coming back that have played a lot of football. It's time for them to kind of take that next step. He's healthy and excited and just a great guy. Tough ask. I mean, Alabama's defense to me this year is the best in college football. Their offense is you know, with Bill O'Brien coming over as a former head coach in the NFL at the Texans, everyone just seems, oh, no problem. Bill O'Brien, just so people know, Bill O'Brien's not bringing his offense to Alabama. Here's the new offense, and this is the terminology. It's the opposite. Anytime Nick, who's had a lot of people go through that seat, they learn his offense. They learn that offense, and that way the players don't have to learn a bunch of new stuff. So he'll be running basically Bama's offense. He might have a couple little twists to it, but for the most part, it'll look very similar. But you got a new quarterback in Bryce Young. You got new running backs, a lot of new receivers. So Bama's going to be relying early on old school Bama, dominant defense and playing smart on offense. And I think because of that, I don't see a blowout. I think De'Aaron King and Miami can hang around and I think they can be competitive. I think Bama wins the game. But I think the Canes can compete.
I think it's a 17.5, 18-point spread. I think that is just laughable. I do for week one with all the points that you just brought up. And I'll say this on De'Aaron King. What did we talk about last week? Players opting out of bowl games or not wanting to be a part of them. Not only did this guy play in the bowl game, he got hurt in the bowl game and said, you know what? I'm coming back because I'm not ending my career on that note.
Yeah.
And they could, if we had a short list of teams that could surprise people, I'd put Miami on that list along with UCLA as teams that, you know what, beginning of the year, we're talking a little bit about. By November, we could be talking a lot about.
Yeah. And man, how about this? You know, I don't know when this airs, but we're sitting around right now just talking kind of Monday morning quarterbacking. And I start to look, I was on a Zoom on Monday morning talking about the upcoming week and trying to put together, you know, as a collective group on our show, we just start talking about some storylines that are unfolding. And I start to go through, and I knew that there were some good games, but I start to go through, like, starting on Thursday night, some of the games, you know, Ohio State and Minnesota. And, you know, even, I mean, if you're a crazy person, Bowling Green in Tennessee, guys like me love games like that. South Florida, NC State. And then you go to Friday, you got North Carolina, Virginia Tech, you got Michigan State, Northwestern. I love your UCF game. First thing I asked about UCF is, where is UCF and Boise playing? You know, is that blue turf? Or is that heat and humidity?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but that, you know, I want to see how Boise's hanging in there with Hank Bachmeyer in the second half, you know, as the humidity setting in. But then you get to Saturday, all those games. It's just like, what did we do other than go through a global pandemic? What did we do to deserve such an unbelievable, true opening week to college football starting on Thursday night? I mean, it's like, get whatever chores you have or whatever you got to do, get it out of the way and just sit there and enjoy the weekend.
Yeah. Date your wife early in the week, take her out. It's all about her, honey. Let's have dinner. I'm going to do all this for you now, because come Thursday, Friday, Saturday, there are going to be some games that look, you mentioned Friday for a second, North Carolina, Virginia Tech. That game should be in late October,
yeah,
with conferences on the line and divisions. Yeah. But yet we get to see if Mac Brown and North Carolina are up to the task to the preseason.
How about the Big Ten? Big Ten's got
Penn State, Wisconsin,
Ohio State, Minnesota, Penn State, Wisconsin, Indiana, Iowa. Indiana, Iowa is an unbelievable game with the seasons that both of those teams feel that they could enjoy this year. This is just sit back and enjoy. And then you got those, you know, you got LSU taking on, going all the way, you know, by the way, I know you and I, our thoughts and concerns or prayers are with everybody in Louisiana, yeah, Mississippi, everything that they're enduring. It seems like every year you just worry about that region, and this year is no different with Ida. So our thoughts are there. But LSU, who, by the way, has had to leave that region just to get ready for this game, but they'll eventually make their way out to Pasadena to play this game against UCLA. That's an intriguing game. The Pac-12, your conference with Fresno State playing Oregon, San Jose State with a great offense with firepower taking on USC. So the Pac-12, I really feel, a conference that is always looking for respect.
Yep.
The table is set with a new conference commissioner. You got some games that you're supposed to take care of. Some games that are a little bit more, maybe you're biting off more than people think you can handle. That, not just this week, but the first two or three weeks, these are huge opportunities for the Pac-12 to remind people we still play football and we can still play with the best teams in the country. So we'll see. We'll talk more about this in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I've always been one of those when we're talking conferences top to bottom. I want to see what your conference can do against someone else. I want to see if Washington can beat Michigan, if US or if Oregon can hang with Ohio State. That's the true barometer of who you are as a league. Cause all leagues are not created equal, but you're all coming from the same geographical footprint. Right.
Yep.
And so you all kind of have the same talent. I think the difference there is Ohio State's built more like a Southern team than they are a Big Ten team based on talent.
Right.
But that's how you get an idea of who your league is top to bottom. And even this week, we get that with some of these big time games where, okay, Notre Dame, you spent a cup of coffee in the ACC. Go see what Florida State has. Georgia, are you the team this year that can finally get past the SEC championship and into the playoff like you did a few years ago? Clemson, are you recruiting good enough to replace all of the talent? These are the questions that you get answered that we typically have to wait a month for.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really think with Georgia, I think you bring up a good point. They've always been a team that we've always looked at and thought Georgia has what it takes to beat Alabama on paper and sitting around in August. And they came close, you know, a couple of years ago before Tua ended up stealing the game and becoming a hero. They were up and looked to be in control of that game. I look at some of these opportunities, and whether it's, you know, Georgia taking on Clemson, some people will say, well, it's early in the year, the game doesn't really matter. I would beg to differ. And the reason I say that, normally, if, you know, I've called these kind of intersectional matchups a lot over the last 15 years. And a lot of times, you know, if you lose, but you're competitive, you can recover and be okay. I would say this. Do you feel Georgia has what it takes to be in the SEC championship and be in the cluster of teams in December of the top five or six? I think we all would say yes. Does Clemson, even with the loss of ETN and Trevor Lawrence, do they have the ability to be in that cluster of five or six? The answer, I think, for most of us is yes. One of the things the committee will look at when they're looking at teams and comparing, they'll look at a few things. They'll look at head-to-head. They'll look at conference championship and things like that. Head-to-head could come into play trying to be a differentiator and separate. Okay, gosh, Clemson, just let's just argument's sake, they just beat North Carolina. They look great. ACC champs, here they are. But there's Georgia. They lost to Bama, but man, they're so good. Only have the one loss to Alabama. They beat Clemson early in the year. They're right there. Who should we put in? Clemson is an ACC champ who just beat North Carolina, or Georgia, who just lost to Alabama, but they beat Clemson at the beginning of the season. They're going to put in Georgia.
Yeah.
So that's my point. Like, be careful. And by the way, that scenario I just presented is not that far-fetched. It's not like pie in the sky. That's kind of the conventional wisdom way of thinking in August of how things may play out. So because of that, especially Clemson, where they don't have a lot of top 25 opponents, they need to win this game.
How do they prepare? Like, when you go into these, I mean, I'm one of those. I'd rather my team or my program start off with a game like this because it's a measuring stick. It's like, boys, here we go. You want to motivate you all through summer, the workouts, the two-a-days, the weightlifting, the sprints. All you got to do is flash Clemson week one. All you got to do is flash Florida State, Notre Dame week one. So you get an idea of who these teams are. I know we'll put that week one asterisk, but a little sloppy. But you as a coach, you're going to know who you have and what kind of team you have right out of the gate because you can't afford to be anything else.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like those big games. You know, as a player, it gets your attention. You know, you come off the last season, a bowl game, and, you know, in a week or two, you kind of take off, and then all of a sudden you start to get into lifting, and it's definitely on the players' minds that they're playing Georgia or you're playing Clemson or you're playing whoever it might be, and it really amps up the offseason without a doubt. I've been on teams where you're not playing anybody, but you got a big third game.
Yeah.
It's just, you're still focused. You're still grinding, but there's something that, man, it's extra incentive to get going throughout the entire offseason when, you know, maybe you don't have that same incentive without that heavyweight opponent up there week one.
And even Monday night, I know this will be airing throughout the week, and we're talking about some of the biggest games in week one, Louisville Ole Miss. I mean, on paper, you're like, well, it's Louisville Ole Miss, but look, that program with Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin and Matt Corral at quarterback, there's a team that could, I like to use the term, screw with people. Ole Miss is one of those teams in the SEC West that if you're not careful, they'll mess with you for the entire season.
The whole key with Louisville is going to be Malik Cunningham taking care of the football. I mean, last year, 12 interceptions. He had three fumbles that he lost, 15 turnovers alone for himself. So he's got tremendous upside, but sometimes I think he tries to do too much. And with some new receivers that he's breaking in, that's going to be, I think, the big thing against that Ole Miss defense is just let the game come to him. And if he does, that's a heck of a game on Monday night between Louisville and Ole Miss.
It is such a good way to wrap up the college football weekend. We can talk Indiana, Iowa all we want. Does Tom Allen still have that magic? There are so many games for you to watch this week in Labor Day week. It's really a college football tradition unlike any other. I want to thank everyone for listening. Make sure to download and subscribe to the College Football Podcast wherever you get your podcast. We'll be posting episodes Sunday through Thursday all season long. Kirk and I will always be on Monday. to break down what just happened, maybe sneak a peek ahead at the week that is. I would imagine, though, Kirk, after this weekend, there's going to be a lot to discuss come next Monday. I'm excited for you, man. You get your two games, you get College Game Day. This is probably one of your favorite weeks of the year, yeah?
Yeah, I love it. It'll be fun. Great, a great game day opportunity in Charlotte with Georgia and Clemson call the game that night, and then head to Atlanta for Monday night's game with Ole Miss in Louisville. So, and then I'll be back with you hopefully next Monday while I'm in Atlanta, getting, we can break down all those incredible games from the weekend.
I'm telling you, everybody, do like Kirk said, get all your stuff done out of the way early, because if you leave from your couch starting Thursday, it's a you problem, not an us problem. We'll do our best to get there. Hey, Kirk, love it, man. Look forward to talking to you next week.
You got it, buddy. Have a great week.